Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
And welcome and good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
Good morning. I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two of the attorneys. We are estate planning attorneys with the Herzog Law Firm. And we're here each Saturday morning from 8 to 9 o'clock to chat with you, talk to you, answer your questions, and hopefully get you some interesting information that's helpful to you in the areas of estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid asset protection planning, and all those good things. So we would love to chat with you here this morning, and so you can pick up the phone and be our first caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. If you're outside the local calling area, you can reach us toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. Morning, Deb.
Good morning, Harry. So you wanted to do the horror stories, the estate planning horror stories coming off Halloween.
Halloween.
We did miss that last week.
We did. We
were going into Halloween.
Halloween was just
Thursday.
2 days ago, Thursday.
Yes. Ben and I were talking about how last Saturday it was Jay Marie and I, and we had loads and loads of callers, and they were all female until Frank finally called in.
Yeah.
Frank called in because Ben threw out a challenge and said, you know, it's all been women that have called. So Frank called in just so he could be the only guy.
That's right. And then proceeded to tell you that he was going to maybe make another amendment.
Right. Amend his trust again.
On his trust. So.
Yes. Good old Frank.
Well, okay. So let's get hey, guys. What are you being so shy about? Pick up the phone here. Just gave you the number, huh? I'm here.
You should give him the number again, just in case.
518-476-5900. Love to talk to you, shy guys, this morning.
Shy guys?
I like it.
It is. Well, I do want to remind you before you get started that, you know what came out? Your Social Security check is going to go up this year in January. They just released the figures. There's a 1.6% increase. You know your Social Security benefits are indexed for inflation. And according to the government, the average Social Security check is going to go up $24.
Ooh-hoo, don't spend it all in one place.
Well, you know, better than going down.
That's true.
I mean, a lot of people, you know, it's real important. Our Social Security is a very important source of their income.
I'm looking forward to that.
And I don't think there's any change. I didn't see any change in the Medicare premiums this year. So I think that'll stay at the same level that it is in any event. So that's where we are. So we're going to talk a little bit about some sort of scary estate plans that were out there. You know, just because you're rich and famous doesn't mean that you've got a good estate plan in place.
True.
Some of the very most wealthy and famous people that we know have
that
absolutely...
We
know them through the media. We don't personally know them. Right. I was using know in the generic sense.
Okay, right. Got it.
Not in the personal
I thought you were
sense.
Holding out on me. I thought you had all these famous friends that you hadn't introduced.
I can't think of a single famous friend that I have, you know? Other than Mark Zuckerberg, you know, Mark and I are, you know.
We
go way back.
I thought so, yeah.
Actually, Debbie's telling me tomorrow she's going down to Croton and Hudson to see, there's this magnificent Halloween display, right?
Of like, yes, Blaze.
7,000 pumpkins?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's where Mark Zuckerberg grew up, in Croton.
It's really hard to get reservations. They start in September, and I've been trying to get reservations, and I finally have reservations for 7 o'clock tomorrow night.
Wow. Is it like is it drive-through or do you walk through?
No, you park and you walk through it. I've never been, but it's supposed to be awesome. So that's my big thing for tomorrow is driving over there. Of course, we're going to go to the outlets first.
Of course.
During the day.
What would be the point if all you're going to do is see a bunch of pumpkins without shopping?
Well, hello, yeah. I mean, we all have priorities in life.
Okay.
Retail therapy is always good.
It is.
Always.
It is.
Definitely. So, you know, well, one mistake you can make, this Tom Carvel, we all have read about Tom Carvel, and all of us have eaten Carvel ice cream.
Oh, yeah.
He was a Carvel ice cream. He lived downstate also, I think, in Westchester County. And when he died in 1990, he's been dead almost 20 years, his estate was over $200 million. That's a lot of ice cream. And he had a will and a trust and all that good stuff. But the horrible mistake that he made is, you know what? He named seven executors.
Ooh.
Seven different people as executor of his estate. And guess what? They didn't all get along with each other.
Well, I think only, what, three can get a full commission?
Yeah. Well, yes. I think, yes, two or three. If there's more than that, they split the commissions. Commissions of three, I think. Mm-hmm. And so they would get less. But let me say, in a $200 million estate, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. You've got to split it.
And they fought among themselves, and they tied up the estate for years to the point where poor Tom's widow died before the estate was fully distributed.
That stinks.
Well, it does. Yeah, it does, you know. But in an estate that size, even two or three commissions is a lot of money. I don't know, did you see recently that Leona Helmsley estate was finally wrapped up after 12 years? Died 12 years ago.
I didn't. And trouble's gone.
Oh, trouble's been gone for years, yeah.
The dog. But
her executors, and she had a bunch of executors also, presented their bill to the surrogates court in New York City, mm-hmm. New York County, and they asked for commissions of $100 million.
Wow.
And you know what? They got it. Because the beneficiaries, you know, as usual, are they're objecting, say, whoa, that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It's coming out of the beneficiary's pocket, you know.
Exactly.
And the judge said, said, guess what? If we calculated the commissions based on the statutory, commissions mm-hmm. The commissions of an executor and a trustee are fixed by the law. The statute says what they
exactly.
are. Now, you could vary that in your will if you chose to, and sometimes people do. But in her estate, if they had calculated the commissions based upon the size of her estate, they would have been $200 million.
Wow.
So she said, hey, they're only asking for half of that. So they got it.
We should get a job like that.
Be a professional executor.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's more than we make in the office, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to say. I know I don't. Okay. All right. So there you go. Who else do we know? Oh, Steve McNair. Now, Steve McNair, you probably don't know. All right. He was a football player.
No.
All right. He was a quarterback for the Tennessee Titans.
Okay.
Back in the, it was a while ago. I don't know if Ben remembers him or not.
Late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he died suddenly and unexpectedly and left a wife and four children.
Yeah, I think he was killed by his girlfriend, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He was survived by his wife, but he was murdered by his girlfriend, who then committed suicide. Okay, so it was sudden and unexpected. He had no will, and so he left his wife, two kids, and the other two kids were from a previous relationship. And they were all, like, underage. They were not adult children. So no will, no kids. A football player, fair amount of money, even though he's not, one of the name recognition immediately popped into mind, still had a fair size estate. And so what awful thing's going to happen there?
Mm.
Well, those kids, when they get to be 18, they're going to get their dad's money right out. And you know what? If he didn't have a will, folks, most of you out there, many of you out there probably think, well, the estate would all go to the surviving spouse. Wrong. Where does it go?
Well, half to the spouse and half to the kids.
Half to the spouse and half to the kids without a will.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then. So not a good idea to have a 18-year-old kid inheriting a couple of million bucks.
Yeah, they're generally not too good with money. I can't think of an 18-year-old.
Especially boys.
Exactly. Boys are, nothing against boys, but yeah, they tend to be a little bit more loose with their money.
Mm.
But we'd love for you to give us a call, 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590. So we have a lot of people that call in and say, can I do my own deed? Can I do my own will? Can I do my own trust? Can I do my own documents? Because I've got this legal Zoom thing, or I've got this other mm-hmm. website that says that I can do them by myself. And we always say, hey, if that's what you want to do, then go for it. But you always get what you pay for. And I have, there's a situation in my family, actually, back in Missouri, and I don't know Missouri law, so I won't quote that, but basically what happened was my uncle deeded his property to my aunt because he didn't have any kids.
Yeah.
And so everything was fine. He passed away. Everything was fine. And now she decided that she was going to sell it to her son. Right?
Right.
So she went to sell it to her son. And then all of a sudden, I get a message from her. And it said, you know.
Your mom said, call up Debbie. She's
exactly. Call up Debbie. She knows what to do. I get a message from my aunt that said that the title company was telling her that she had to find his son, right, who was adopted out. And I'm like, no, you don't.
Right.
I'm like, he's adopted out. You don't have to find him. So then, you know, she's like, oh, great, thanks, whatever. And then I said to my mom, have you heard from her? And she's like, matter of fact, I have. Apparently, they did their own deed, and she deeded it to herself and my uncle. So she, now that he's gone, they didn't do with rights of survivorship. So now his half of the house
passed on his death to his distributees, which would be his, he had a child.
But his child was adopted out. So it would go where? So it, he has no spouse, he has no kids, he has no parents. So now it's going to go to his brothers and sisters, right?
Siblings, or if they're dead, it would go to their nieces and nephews.
Right.
Children.
And so two of his brothers are gone, right? Which one is my dad, and the other one is my other uncle, right?
Yeah, right.
Which I told my mom, I'm like, if my sister and I have to sign off, that's not a problem. We won't have a problem. The problem is one of the children from my other uncle is not a very nice person.
Oh, no.
And so the problem is I don't think she'll sign off.
This is a problem with doing your own documents, you know? I mean, you don't drill your own teeth. You go to the dentist to get your teeth cleaned and and get a cavity filled. You don't go by.
No.
David in Kingston is on the line. Hey, David. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Debbie. Good morning, Harry. I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
I have an estate planning question. I'll give you the scenario, and then I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Okay.
Single, never married, no children. I do have nieces and nephews. And I'm looking at, or what I would like to do, is put a Roth IRA, naming a trust as the beneficiary. And the reason for doing that is I would like to defer payments to my nieces and nephews until, say, around their mid-50s. I want to try and avoid at this point giving a 20-some-year-old money should something happen to me. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Okay. The Roth IRA, of course, is a non-taxable asset. You don't have to take distributions from your Roth unless you want to. When you pass away, if the Roth passes either to an individual, it could pass to a trust. We are often not crazy about having trust beneficiaries of IRAs, but from the Roth standpoint, it really probably doesn't matter because it's non-taxable to the beneficiaries who inherit it also. So we don't have the same income tax considerations we do in a regular IRA. But I believe the beneficiaries would still have to take distributions. All right. I don't think once the beneficiary nieces and nephews inherit the IRA, I don't think they could defer them like you can. They have to start taking distributions, I believe, the year following your death, based on their age and life expectancy, although those distributions will still be tax-free to them. The advantage of the Roth is you've already paid the income tax on the basic Roth amount, but the buildup, the earnings inside the Roth IRA, are tax. It's tax-free money. You don't pay taxes on it, and as long as it's in the Roth, your beneficiary distributees don't pay taxes on it either. So, yeah, I think we could set that up. We might want to, if there are significant age differences between the nieces and nephews, we might want to have a separate trust for each of them, so each of them could use their respective life expectancies. For instance, as one is 10 years older than the other, they could take it out more or less rapidly based on their age and life expectancy. So, yeah, I mean, that's something that definitely could be set up. Now, I just want to bring to your attention one thing that is in the pipeline right now. There is a bill in Congress called, jokingly called, the Secure Act, okay? And it's not secure at all. It's securing the annuity industry is what it's doing. And it is going to, if it's passed, and it's already been passed by the House of Representatives by a vote about 417-3, it is currently held up in the Senate by none other than Senator Ted Cruz from Texas, and hopefully he's going to die there. But this law would actually force, it would eliminate stretch IRAs for inherited IRA beneficiaries. And it's going to force the beneficiary to take the IRA out over a period of somewhere between 5 and 10 years. So even though your child might have a life expectancy of 20 years, under this law, they might have to take the money out within 10 years. And the reason is the government wants to force distributions of these assets in order to collect the income taxes on them in 10 years or 5 years instead of 20 years. So the big brouhaha trade-off that they're all promoting as this wonderful consumer benefit is they're going to let you keep your IRA until you're 72 instead of 70 and a half. You know, so big deal, another 18 months, and you're trading these things off. The other thing, the real reason for this bill, as long as I'm talking, the real reason for this bill...
Why don't you really tell us, Harry? Tell us why.
...is to allow the annuity industry to start selling annuities to small IRA and 401k plans, like in our law firm. Almost no retirement plans offer an annuity product as part of their investment portfolio available to their employees. And there's one very important reason for it. As a whole, as opposed to other investments, they are higher risk. If the insurance company goes belly up, we all remember AIG back in 2008, almost went belly up, except for the government bailout. theoretically, my employees could sue us for offering an imprudent investment. So guess what this bill does? It now insulates me from liability for offering those products to my employees. Okay? And there's some other things in there also that I won't bore you with, but, you know, on the whole, this is not exactly a piece of consumer legislation. Okay? So, having said that...
If I make the trust the beneficiary of the IRA versus
yes.
the nieces and nephews,
uh-huh.
I'm not concerned about whether the payout period changes from 10 years to 5 years. It's
uh-huh.
once the payouts begin, I would like the trust to hold them until the nieces and nephews become age, like I say,
that's
in 50s. So how would that play out?
Well, you could collapse the whole Roth, I think. In other words, when you die, the whole Roth could be liquidated. There would be no tax impact to doing that. And then the money would be in the trust, and it wouldn't be subject to these age distributions. You could distribute it out in any fashion that you wanted to. What you're giving up by doing that is the money now that's been taken out of the Roth and put into the trust. The income from that, the earnings, the interest, and dividends are going to be taxable rather than tax-exempt. And that's a function of how much money and whether that's really an issue. You know, you could also invest it in tax-exempt government bonds and still have tax-exempt income. So,
and
you
know. I would think at that point there's no more earning value to that money if it goes into the trust?
The trustee, whoever the trustee is going to invest it. They're going to open an investment account, and they're going to buy mutual funds or stocks or... Okay. Bank deposits or whatever. So no, the assets are still going to continue to earn income, and as long as that income is distributed out to the beneficiaries, they'll pay the tax on the earnings rather than the trust. All right, it depends how much money is going to be in this Roth. If it's a fair amount of money, sounds like it might be, then you know. But what you probably ought to do is come on in, if you're in Kingston area, you ought to come into the Kingston office and sit down and chat with us one of these days and kind of hammer out you know, that more, you know, it's hard to do
as one of your estate planning seminars in the local area and then perhaps pose the same question. And usually David is the one that administers.
Yeah, he's been doing the Kingston seminars for the most part. Yeah,
yeah, he's going to be out there the 14th. There's one on Thursday, November 14th, and two in the afternoon.
Okay, let me write that down. Thursday, November 14th?
Mm-hmm. It's 2 in the afternoon.
Okay.
It's at the Courtyard on 500 Frank Sotile Boulevard in Kingston.
All right. So we've changed from the Holiday Inn Express to the Courtyard.
Well,
we
move it around.
We kind of go back and forth. And then last time, and there was a new hotel. Wasn't up in Lake Katrine we were at last time? Or, I know. We kind of move around.
Yeah. Whoever makes all the best cookies.
That's it. It's all about the cookies.
It is. We ask for our clients. When you get your evaluation sheet, we'll ask you if you like the cookies. Or
okay. Well, I thank you both for your comments today.
Sure.
And I will definitely call Stacy and book a seat for the November 14th seminar.
Great. Thanks. We look forward to seeing you.
Thanks
thank
a lot.
You very much.
You bet. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Tim in Catskill is our next caller. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning. How are you today?
Excellent.
Well, I'm wondering if you could speak on the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program. It's something my sister stumbled across and sort of alarmed her a bit. She's the executor for my dad's estate. Just in a bit of history, my dad has been self-paid for his nursing care for about 18 months. In January, he runs out of money and he will be then placed on Medicaid. My sister was a little alarmed about this, reading about this program. Can you speak on that a bit?
So she's concerned that he'll have to pay back money out of the estate? Or, I mean, what happens is he's private pay right now, and then when he goes on Medicaid, he's only allowed to keep $15,450.
I understand.
And then everything else goes to pay for his care. Does he have a trust?
No, he doesn't. We talked to them. We talked to both our parents 10 years ago about doing a trust and protecting, et cetera. They wanted to have nothing to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
So consequently, just before he went into the nursing home, he sold his house and he had money to pay for nursing care, and now he will have spent it down. You're correct. He is not on Medicaid now, but once he is on Medicaid, his health is actually pretty good. Other than the fact he can't walk, thus the nursing care. If he was in there for another 2 or 3 years, how does this Medicaid estate recovery program affect someone like him that will be on Medicaid?
Well, he doesn't have any assets, so there's really nothing to recover from. What happens whenever he goes on Medicaid, again, he's allowed to keep the $15,450, prepay his funeral, and he's allowed to keep a car. So whenever he passes, hopefully the account that he keeps the $15,450 in, you want to make sure that that's joint with someone.
Yes, it is.
And then whenever he passes away, there's really nothing for them to recover against because he doesn't have any assets. It's too bad that your sister didn't come to us before he spent down all of his money, because even though he didn't do a trust, we could have saved about half of his assets.
We did talk about that, and again, after running that by, because I spoke to David about that.
Okay.
And he explained how it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Family members just didn't want to do it.
Okay, so.
For starters, the hospital gave him only 2 months of life left when we were discussing this. So we thought, well, it's really not worth it. And then all of a sudden he bounced back. And by then,
yeah, that happens often.
It does.
Everyone lost interest going that route.
Okay, so again, when he's down to the $15,450, she can apply for Medicaid, but you're going to have the still have the 5 years worth of records, the checking, savings, CDs, everything.
All that is in the works. All that is is really in the works now, and we're set actually for January admittance. With Medicaid.
Yeah, so I mean, like I said, as long as that account is joint, there's really nothing for them to recover against, and they can't go back against any of the kids or family or anything. What your sister needs to make sure that she does is anything that she signs, she's his power of attorney, correct?
Yes, she is.
She needs to make sure anything that she signs in his behalf, no matter how silly it seems, that she does it as power of attorney, so she's not personally responsible for anything. And then when he when he passes, the joint account will belong to the joint account owner, and that's it.
Yeah, that's really critical, the asset, because if the if that bank account with the 15 grand is only in your dad's name, then the county could take it. Okay? But if it's in a joint names with rights of survivorship or there's a beneficiary on the account, then they can't take it because the state of New York can only recover from an estate that is that are probate assets. So if he had a life insurance policy, for instance, $1,500 of life insurance is exempt. And so if he had a $1,500 life insurance policy, he could still go on Medicaid and keep that policy no matter what the death benefit was. But we have to have an individual name there as a beneficiary. And then it would go to the beneficiary rather than back to the county. So other than that, as Debbie said, he won't, you know, there won't be any recoverable assets. Okay.
So here's what I really don't understand. It sounds like that this program is going after people who have a lot of money. But if you have a lot of money, how are you not, how are you getting on Medicaid in the first place?
Well, basically, either you have a trust where you preserved your assets over 5 years ago, or you do the note and transfer and you preserve half of your money. I mean, the only thing, what you have to understand is the only thing they can go after is when a person passes away if they have assets individually in their name. So if that individual bank account, the one he has his $15,000 in, like Harry said, then they can go after that. But if there's everything's joint, or if it has a beneficiary, it's not available to pay for their care, and then it's not going to be attached.
Right. So we have clients, for instance, who have been on Medicaid for 2 or 3 years, and when they pass away, they'll have $15,000 in a joint bank account with someone. They might have $700,000 in a Medicaid Asset Protection Trust. Mm-hmm. Now, the assets in that trust are not recoverable by the state of New York because the trust is not a probate asset. So even though they have all this money that you would think theoretically could be recovered, it can't be under New York state law, okay? New York can only recover out of probate assets. About 10 years ago, the state proposed some regulations that would have allowed them to recover assets that were either in a life estate or in a joint account. They were put out as proposed regulations, and there was such an outcry about them that the governor simply let the proposed regulations expire and they never implemented them. So we're still where we have always been in New York for estate recovery only out of probate assets. That's not true in some other states.
Okay, and because this is a federal program, maybe that's what she was reading then, that New York State has more protections in place than, say, Missouri?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we do. Because some states allow recovery from a joint account or an asset in which the decedent had a life interest. And you could certainly probably convincingly argue that they had a life interest in the assets in their trust because they have a right to all the income. It's not much different than a life estate and a piece of real property. I don't know how other states have handled that. We haven't had to deal with that in New York. I know Massachusetts about 10, 12 years ago had that same statute, and they actually implemented it. It became the law, and there was such a public outcry that a year later the legislature repealed it and went back to probatable recovery. So as it turns out, your sister's worrying about something that I don't think she needs to worry about.
Okay, well then I will reassure her.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Tell her to start listening to the show.
Well, she's in Toronto.
Oh, that makes it hard.
I think she could go on, she might be able to go on the radio website and listen. I don't know if we podcast this or not, but, you know.
That's true, too.
Anyway, take care.
Okay.
Thanks for calling in.
We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And this is the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour, brought to you by the Herzog Law Firm. And we're going to go right back to our callers, Cheryl in the Berkshires.
Good morning, Cheryl.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks. I think my question's kind of similar to the last person. So my mom's 95, and my sister and myself are both executors, which I can see is causing a little bit of problem, but I think we'll get through that. But my issue more was my dad has had a trust. He's gone. My mom does still have a trust. She's still, you know, very healthy. So the one dispute my sister and I have as executors is she feels like all the money that my mom has, she earned, and that she should have that go to her care. And she feels that if you have Medicaid, then you won't get into as good of a place, and you won't get as well care. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So how do I kind of tell her that I kind of feel like, look, if we don't protect her assets as much as we can, then we really didn't plan well. But she comes back with, well, it's her money, and she should do whatever she wants with it.
So did mom set up the trust? Mom and dad set up their trust, right? So they obviously set it up for a reason. And we have a lot of people that come in and do that. They say, I want to make sure that there's something for my kids. So obviously they made a conscious decision that that's what they wanted to do. And the answer to your question about not getting as good a care, I mean, probably 80% of the people that are in nursing homes are on Medicaid. It's not...
Yeah, there isn't. Are you in New York or Massachusetts?
Massachusetts.
Okay, but the worlds are very similar there in terms of these trusts. If they have an asset protection trust, they can't... there are different rules with respect to retirement accounts like IRAs, but...
Right.
The fact of the matter is a violation of federal and state law to discriminate against people who are applying for or receiving Medicaid. And so your mother, if she were on Medicaid, is going to be in the same room as someone who's paying $500 a day for the same care. They have the same staff, the same rooms. When you go on Medicaid, they don't wheel you down to a Medicaid wing.
There's no scarlet M on your chest.
Right. No, I mean, it's true. And people don't realize that. And as Debbie said, about 75 or 80% of all people in this country in nursing homes are on Medicaid. Because they have either exhausted their, you know, at the rate of $150,000 to $180,000 a year of private pay, it doesn't take most people very long to blow through their life savings.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, tell your sister that obviously they wanted to protect their assets. And does mom have any retirement accounts or anything like that?
No.
Yeah,
no.
So, I mean, those would have had to go to pay for her care. They're going to take all of her income. Medicaid's just going to pick up the difference to pay for her care. So, and if you think about it, and people, there's kind of like a misconception. Whenever you're going into a nursing home, right, the nursing home is a business and they're looking to see how they're going to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
So when they look at a person that has Medicaid, they know that they're going to get paid, right? They know that the Medicaid is going to pay for their care. And then if you have long-term care insurance, granted, long-term care insurance may end up paying for your care, but usually there's an elimination period. There's a 30, 60, 90-day elimination period. So who's going to pay during those 90 days? And then there's people that have money that can private pay. And nursing homes know that if they have money, that money may not be there for very long, because if they go to an attorney to try to preserve the assets, that money is going to... probably half of it go away. And also what you need to think about is whenever you're private pay too, again, how long is that money going to last? And then the people are still going to have to apply at Medicaid at the end of the day to pay for their care. So people that are actually on Medicaid are actually a better person to go into a nursing home because they know where they're going to get paid from.
Yeah, they, I mean, that's the more than half of nursing home revenue comes from Medicaid, probably 2/3 to 3/4. There's this misconception that somehow there are private pay nursing homes. I mean, I don't know of a single nursing home in the upstate New York or western Massachusetts area that doesn't take Medicaid. I mean, they'd be out of business because there aren't that many people who can afford to pay $15,000 a month indefinitely for their care. Mm-hmm. They might be able to do it for a year or two, but then they're out of money. And if they don't take Medicaid, where are they going to put these people? They have to move them to another nursing home that accepts Medicaid. So you know, the fact of the matter is people with a boatload of money, they don't ever go to nursing homes. They're cared for at home by private staff who their family hires to live in the home and take care of mom or dad, and we can set it up so it's income tax deductible as a medical expense. The wealthy always have had a subsidy from the government for these things. Average middle-class folks like you and most other people's families have the ability to shelter assets and not bankrupt their life savings the last 2 years of their life because they have to wind up in a nursing home instead of dying in a hospital. It's the luck of the draw. Do you know, is your mother's trust and your dad's trust, were they trust designed to specifically protect assets, or was it just like a revocable trust to avoid probate? Or don't you know?
I think it was more to avoid probate.
Yeah, because if that's the case, then the assets in her trust would not be insulated from having to be spent on her nursing home care. But having said that, as Debbie said earlier, we could still protect half of it. So this is something you all should consider. We don't have an office in Massachusetts, although I could tell you one of the partners in our law firm is actually licensed to practice law in Massachusetts. She actually lives in West Stockbridge. And so at least she could talk. I don't know if she could handle it, but she could certainly talk to you on the phone about the differences between the Massachusetts Medicaid rules and the New York rules. Okay?
Yeah, you could give Jane Marie a call. Jane Marie's the partner that actually is licensed in Massachusetts. You could give her a call on Monday. The office phone number is 518-465-7581. That's 518-465-7581. And like I said, it's Jane Marie Schaefer. And she's licensed in Massachusetts. She could probably give you a better idea of what you should do. And we'd actually have to look at your trust to see if it's, well, mom's trust, to see if it's an irrevocable trust, because that would be, you know, able to preserve assets. If it's a revocable trust, then those assets would be available to pay for her care.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot. Cool.
You're welcome.
Yeah, there are state-to-state differences. I mean, for instance, in Massachusetts, your IRA isn't partially protected.
Right.
You have to spend the whole IRA in Massachusetts. You don't have to spend it all in New York unless you're in there for a long time. Janet and Colin E. Good morning.
Morning, Janet.
Hi. I just want to mention something about my brother. He had a small series of heart attacks and a small series of strokes, and I've experienced a few of them, and he had to go to the hospital. A friend of his put him there, and he didn't want to stay in the hospital because the doctors already told him, even the ambulance told him, that they could tell he had strokes and heart attacks. And the doctor in the hospital says, you damage your heart a little bit too. But he refuses to go to a hospital. And if he gets sick and goes to a hospital and doesn't make it out, I won't be able to... Like, if he does recover, I won't be able to take care of him.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what I'm going to do, but I won't be able to take care of him at all. So what do I do in that case? I can't put him in a nursing home because he doesn't want to go there. So I think assisted living. What do you think?
Does he have a home?
Yeah, he lives with me.
Oh, he lives with you. So, you could always look at getting community Medicaid for him, which is Medicaid that pays for care at home. You could look at that and have Medicaid pay for aides and stuff to come into the house. How would he feel about people coming into the house to take care of him?
He would like that, but it, you know, since I'm owner of the house, I really don't want him back because I'll have to be waiting on him hand and foot 24/7, like, you know.
Well, then the only choice would be either to admit him to an assisted living facility, or he would have to go to a nursing home. Now, unless he has about $5,000 a month of income or assets to pay for assisted living facilities do not accept Medicaid patients, except in rare occasions. There's
a couple places.
There's a couple of ones that do. There's one in Albany that's just having a lot of health problems right now because it's out on Western Avenue, but they've had Legionnaire's disease, so it's currently closed. But the nursing home would admit him, assuming he lacks two of the five activities of daily living, and then you could apply for Medicaid, or the nursing home could.
Well, if there's a few assisted living, that's where he would want to go. But the thing is, if they're having problems, a few of them are having problems, what else can he do? Because I cannot take care of him.
All right, well, then, you know, the assisted living, before they would accept him in assisted living, someone would do an evaluation to see whether his health is good enough to be a candidate for assisted living. Beyond that, because assisted living is not a nursing home, and if a person has declined physically to a point where assisted living can't properly care for them, they're going to ask you to, at that point, move them into a nursing home, which is the only other alternative. I don't think that you think of any other options. Then that's it. It's home care, assisted living, or a nursing home. Those are the three choices.
Right? Well, and if she doesn't want to bring him home, she doesn't have to. It's her house.
If she wants to, she can't handle it. She can't physically do all the work and be a 24/7 caregiver. Now, you know, so.
Right. If she says there's no safe discharge, right, that she can't take him home, then they're going to have to place him.
Well, they will. They won't discharge him from the hospital home if there's no one to care for him.
Right.
Okay, they won't. They have to have a safe discharge plan in place. And so at that point, they would probably discharge him for chronic care.
Yeah, true.
I guess so.
True, they would have to place him. And unfortunately, the problem is whenever they're trying to place him, if the hospital says there's no reason for him to be there, then that's an issue because then Medicare won't pay for his care anymore.
Right. Exactly. So, and that's what happens. They say it's no longer medically necessary for you to be in the hospital. So, starting tomorrow, Medicare isn't going to pay the hospital bill.
No.
Now you're laying in a $2,500 a day bed in the hospital instead of a $500 a day bed
in a nursing home.
So,
yeah, it's a little expensive.
10 days can be expensive. Yeah.
So you could be our next caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. We'd love to hear from you.
I saw this really interesting thing, and I got to ask you about it yesterday. Because I'm not sure, but I saw an article yesterday that indicates that nearly half of parents are still partially financing and financially supporting their adult children. Okay? And that the average empty nester, whose children supposedly have left the nest and are in their own apartments, the average parent is spending about $250 a month supporting their adult child. And here is a list of the things that they're normally subsidizing them. Number one, cell phone bill. rent, groceries, student loans, car payments, wedding, dining out, mortgage, car insurance, and their music streaming and social media websites. Now, you have an adult child.
I knew that was coming, right?
So I was just curious. Knowing you, you're not picking up anything, but maybe you are.
That's kind of a backhanded compliment,
comment,
right?
Ms. Vernie?
I am not.
I knew it.
No, definitely not. No, I transferred his car over to him. Well, I paid it off first, but mm-hmm. gave him his car. Mm-hmm. And when I gave him his car, I said, this is your car. This is who the insurance guy is. You need to call him and get insurance. Mm-hmm. And he did. He got insurance.
And you need to get your own gas card now.
And, you know, and so he's always bought his own gas. Mm-hmm. But he has his own insurance and everything. But it is funny that you asked that because where he lives, he walks to work. So he very rarely drives his car.
Uh-huh.
And he said to me, it was a couple of weeks ago, he and I went to breakfast after the radio. He said, yeah, I need to get my car inspected. And I'm like, the inspections do? He's like, well, yeah, but, you know, I don't really drive it. It just kind of sits there. So, yeah, he's a little bit behind on that. But other than that, no, he pays all of his own bills. I think his dad pays for his cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, no, he pays for his own insurance. His car is paid for. He has his own student loans.
Mm-hmm. Great. That's great. I actually discussed this with one other person in our office, one of our paralegals, and he has two sons, I think, and they're still subsidizing the them. And of course, one of them is still in school.
That makes a little bit of a difference. Mm-hmm. But whenever they've got a good job and everything, and he just got a big promotion, so he can pay for his own bills. Right. I actually did. I did buy him a new comforter for his bed because he has issues with his dog. And, you know, it was one of those things where I was just shopping and there it was, and I just picked it up for him and dropped it off to him. But other than that, I don't really support him in any way.
All right. Good. Well, good to know.
You were correct. I don't. Spread your wings and fly.
Okay. We got some time for a couple of more calls here at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900.
We were talking about Christmas earlier, that my mom told me I need to get my Christmas list together because she does all of her shopping before Thanksgiving because she doesn't want to fight the crowds.
Well, she's got 28 days, I think. Isn't Thanksgiving's very late. It's like the 28th of November, which is almost the end of the month. So you might need to do that. There won't be as many shopping days this year between Thanksgiving and Christmas. Might only be like 26 or 7.
Yeah, but Black Friday is like Black Thursday anyway. You know, it's like
they've already started.
The stores are already open on Thanksgiving Day.
They already started. Did you see that? Mariah Carey did a very funny tweet yesterday. And I don't usually read these things, but it was in one of the British newspapers that I read. And she was waking up. She was waking up on November 1st.
Uh-huh.
Her cell phone said October 31st. And she was laying in her bed in her Halloween costume, which, curiously enough, like some other folks I know, she was dressed as a witch.
Go figure.
And when the cell phone clock went to November 1st, she gets on the phone and she calls up Santa. She wakes up in a pair of red holly-colored pajamas and she says, "Santa, it's time," and then launches into her, you know, boop, 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 you know, All I Want for Christmas,
yeah. Yeah,
you know, her famous song that everybody sings at Christmas.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Anyway, that's cute.
But yeah, that's cute. We could have another caller at 518-476-5900, 518-476-5900, 1-800-WROW-590. There was a cute cartoon on Facebook that had three lanes, had three cars and had three lanes of traffic. Had like a little Halloween guy with a pumpkin, and then had like a little turkey, and then had Santa in his car, and he was like cutting across and says, "Hey, stay in your lane." He was cutting off Christmas. He was cutting off Halloween and Thanksgiving. He was like, right in front of him. So, you know, it's kind of, the holidays aren't segregated anymore. Uh-huh. I mean, they had Christmas decorations up before Halloween.
Well, they do it. At Lowe's and Home Depot, they were all, Santa may be at the mall. I don't know. It's just
usually
a lot
shows
of
up around Thanksgiving.
The Hallmark Channel is now showing Christmas movies, like almost on a nonstop basis, you know? It's November 2nd.
So maybe we should go back to the estate planning horror stories.
Well, you know, Marilyn Monroe was a fascinating person. She tragically died in 1962. I remember I was at summer camp. I think I was 14 or 15 years old. I was at Valley Forge Military Academy summer camp the year she OD'd on, it was August, I remember that. Her estate, she had a will. She only left $100,000 to her mother. She didn't apparently have a huge monetary estate. And interestingly enough, she left all of her personal property, her items of personal property, which were fairly extensive. She left to Lee Strasberg. Lee Strasberg was an actor. He was a mentor, kind of a father figure to her. Lee Strasberg, for those of you who might remember, invented method acting, and he ran a place in New York called the Actors Studio, where very many famous actors, and you may have remembered Lee Strasberg was a guy who played Hyman Roth in The Godfather Part II. All right? He was the Florida mafia guy.
Oh, okay.
Went to Cuba, and you know, they were doing the stuff with the Cuban stuff down there. Anyway, but anyway, he inherited all of Marilyn Monroe's personal items. And later, after Lee Strasberg died, he never did anything with them. And his wife, his third wife, stored them. And in 1990, which was almost 30 years after Marilyn Monroe died, they were auctioned off at Sotheby's. And you know how much they brought in? A little over $13
million. I was going to say millions of dollars.
$13 million. And also her photographs and negatives. There were disputes, I know, about who owned the negative. You know that famous picture of her standing on a New York subway grate with her skirt blowing around?
Right.
That photograph's worth millions of dollars, the rights to that photograph. And there was a dispute between her estate and a photographer who took it as to who had the rights in the photograph. I think the photographer actually won, but she had a set of pearls that she mm-hmm. wore all the time. And at one point, someone asked her, I guess it was Lee Strasberg's wife asked her, where she got them. And she said, the emperor gave them to me.
Ooh.
And he said, who? She said, Emperor Hirohito. She said, I was on my honeymoon with Joe DiMaggio, and we went to Tokyo, and the emperor gave me this string of pearls. And later on, she gave them to Lee Strasberg's daughter because she didn't like him any, because they reminded her of her marriage to Joe DiMaggio.
Wow.
It only lasted 9 months. She said, well, you know, all he did was watch TV day and night. Mm. Imagine that.
And she didn't know that before she married him?
I guess not. Anyway, the planning for her personal property was really poor.
Yes.
All right? It was horrible, to coin a phrase of horror stories.
Okay.
trying to stay with the theme here. All right. So we did all those things, and what happened was she, because it was long since had died, and the Strasbergs wound up with all these items. They were actually supposed to be, and in the instructions in her will, it was interesting that no one ever challenged it, because her will said she was giving all these personal items to Lee Strasberg to distribute them among my friends and other people. Ooh. As he shall see fit. Well, he never did that.
Well, he didn't see it fit.
He stored them, and then... right. He stored them in storage for years, and then later, after he died, his widow auctioned them off and kept the money.
Well, he didn't see fit. That's why you've got to be careful with the language. A lot of people say that. They put language in their wills that I leave all my jewelry and everything to my niece... And, you know, for her to distribute to my friends and family.
Right.
Well, so...
I mean, I think it's... Yeah, it's... If there were litigation about that, I think it would be treated as an absolute outright gift to the person, and that those instructions are what we call in the law precatory instructions, which means they're an expression of your desire, but they're not legally enforceable.
Well, we have a lot of people that do what are called gift letters...
Right.
So that way it's not in the will, because unfortunately we have a lot of situations. We have a lot of snowbirds that are our clients, and so they leave around this time of year. Then they come back in the spring, and they'll come back in the spring, and who didn't come to visit, who's out of the will. Mm-hmm. And so each spring they would be changing their wills. You know, this one doesn't get the diamond ring anymore. This one doesn't get the this and that. And so finally we started looking at what we call gift letters. And it's a letter that says, this person gets this, this person gets that. And then in the will, we say, I want my personal property distributed right. pursuant to a gift letter.
Right.
And then the person can change the gift letter anytime they want to and don't have to redo their will. But I've only had it happen one time where it said, I give it to my executor to distribute pursuant to my gift letter. And the executor didn't. He kept everything. Mm-hmm. And he could, because, again, it's precatory.
It's not legally enforceable.
No.
Even the gift letter isn't, but most part. One time, about 25 years ago, I had a client who left a letter that was referenced in the will. And there was a dispute about personal items among the beneficiaries. And what I did was I filed this letter with the surrogate's court. And although it was a precatory request, the surrogate judge, I don't even remember which county it was in, they required that we distribute it per the list.
Wow.
Even though, the problem in New York is you can't refer in a will to an extraneous document that's not in the will other than a trust.
Right.
Okay? Now, so otherwise, it doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's why, and as Debbie said, we're trying to save you money here, so we don't want you coming back every 3 or 4 years and changing your will to leave the diamond ring now to your granddaughter instead of your daughter. And, you know, sometimes people they give away this stuff before they die, and then it's not there anymore. Then we say, oh, where's the diamond ring? And we say, oh, she gave it to Susie.
Mm-hmm.
I say, did she? Or did Susie just pick it up one day when she's at the house? You know, because...
That never happens.
Happens all the time.
I know.
And clients would go in, and my gosh, they haven't even had the funeral yet, and somebody's in there raiding grandma's jewelry box, and they're not even the executor. They have no right to. But my sister went over, and they started moving furniture out. You can't do it. I'm sorry. The executor's in charge of those things, and I don't care if she was your mother. It's premature to do that, and personal property. This is what creates problems. Don't you see that? And there's only one pie plate that Grandma made the apple pie in, and there's three kids. So who's going to get Grandma's pie plate?
And Zach told me he's going to back up a dumpster and take care of mine. You guys have a great weekend.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.